The 7,317th meeting of the Security Council is called to order. I acknowledge the presence in the chamber of the representatives of those countries elected to serve as council members for 2015-16: Angola, Malaysia, New Zealand, Spain, and Venezuela, who commence formally observing council proceedings from today in preparation for their membership. The provisional agenda for this meeting is United Nations peacekeeping operations, the role of policing in peacekeeping and post-conflict peace building. The agenda is adopted. I would like to warmly welcome the distinguished Under-Secretary General for Peacekeeping Operations, the United Nations Police Advisor, heads of police components, and other distinguished representatives. I'm very pleased that the Council is convening this briefing from heads of police components, the first ever dedicated Council meeting on policing issues. The number of police deployed in United Nations peacekeeping operations and special political missions has increased dramatically in recent times, and policing-related tasks in mission mandates have become more complex. It is appropriate that the Council consider, in a holistic way, the increasingly important role that the United Nations work on policing plays in the restoration and maintenance of international peace and security. In accordance with Rule 39 of the Council's Provisional Rules of Procedure, I invite the following briefers to participate in this meeting: Mr. Hervé Ladsous, Under-Secretary General for Peacekeeping Operations; Mr. Greg Hines, Police Commissioner of UNMIL; Mr. Fred Yeager, Police Commissioner of UNMIS; and Mr. Louis Carrillo, Police Commissioner of MINUSCA. It is so decided. The Security Council will now begin its consideration of item 2 of the agenda. I now give the floor to Mr. Hervé Ladsous.
Je vous remercie, Madame.
Thank you, Madam President. And at the outset, I would like to say how grateful we all are that you have taken the initiative for the first time to launch this Security Council debate on all considerations related to UN policing. I would also like to thank you for taking the initiative for this draft resolution, which is a first, I believe, in the history of the United Nations, and which is fully integrated into all of the efforts that we in the Secretariat have been undertaking, including recently to better frame the development of UNPOL, including as part of what we call the Strategic Guidance Framework. I believe that all of this is making an enormous contribution towards strengthening doctrine, as well as the way in which we're trying to resolve the problems that we're facing. As you yourself said, the UN police has seen an unprecedented growth in recent years, some thousands in the start of the 2000s, and now 2,352, exactly. UN police have been deployed from 91 member states and deployed to 13 peacekeeping operations and 4 special political missions. I believe that this exponential increase illustrates the challenges that we are facing in the modern day world. The change in the security nature and the needs that we're facing means that there's a range of threats now that have evolved from traditional threats of basic security to encompass now terrorism, and to combat organized crime, to combat corruption. I believe that all of this is part of the reality that our police are now experiencing, and I would like to pay strong tribute to them for the courage and imagination that they have shown in this difficult period. As I always say, Madam President, the face of a police officer is the one that citizens of countries see to the countries that they're deployed. It is our police who give the daily face of the mission, whether it be political or peacekeeping. Therefore, it is very important that this first impression made is convincing and lasting. Allow me also to say, as I often say in my country, wisdom starts with the gendarmerie and their role. I think that this is the image that our police need to embody in all of the tasks that they undertake for general stabilization. And this has threefold implications. First, providing assistance to host countries on rule of law, for example, and in the police services. And in some cases, where there's less structure and more weakness, it's important for the police to undertake interim policing tasks, if necessary, to enforce the law, and essentially to support everything to do with reform and restructuring, and quite simply, sometimes, even creating a national police or some other form of structure that is responsible for upholding the law. All of this ultimately is something that calls into play the capacities, the need for more sophisticated capacities beyond traditional distinctions between foreign police units and individual police officers. Every day, we are facing increasing needs for specialized police in science or technology. Here, I'm talking about 21st century technology, not that of centuries ago, or even 20 years ago. This implies application of internal domestic law. There's a need, therefore, for increasing sophistication in policing. Member states are providing us with significant support here in all of these aspects. And so, through your council, I'd also like to launch an appeal for greater linguistic skills. We are working in theatres of operation, after all, that absolutely require, at least for training purposes, to have a mastery of the language spoken. I'm thinking about Arabic, for example, or French in the host countries. And, Madam President, we increasingly need more women police. First of all, because we set a goal. Perhaps it might be far too ambitious. It was to have 20% of women among UN police. And this year we're far from that, I confess with humility that. But at the same time, this perhaps the UN police is a reflection of national police. While some are making great strides in gender, others are not. And obviously we're dependent on what member states provide us. And increasingly we're deploying units made up entirely of women. Whenever issues of law and order emerge, and where it's a question of the need to address women's issues, to address their hardships, there's a need to address women's issues in DRC, Haiti, for example, Liberia. This is a very convincing argument. I will stop there, Madam President. Once again, I'd like to thank you so very much for taking this initiative. I think it's very useful for all of us. And I'd like to say that we will continue to work with the heads of UN police to try to always improve our abilities to be up to the task, because the contribution of UN police to the goals and values that we have, which are peace and security, respect for human rights, the police are an illustration of all of this, and I thank them for it. Thank you, Madam President.
I thank Mr. Latsous as Under Secretary General for Peacekeeping Operations for his comprehensive briefing. I now give the floor to Mr. Greg Hines.
Madam President, thank you for the opportunity for my colleagues and I to brief the Security Council on the role of the United Nations Police in peacekeeping operations and special political missions. I look forward to the Council's adoption of the first Security Council resolution on UN policing. As a police commissioner in the field, this will be a significant outcome as it will provide us with the much-needed strategic and practical guidance which will help us to do our work more effectively. I would also like to sincerely express gratitude on behalf of the United Nations mission in Liberia to the Council and to the police contributing countries for the support we have received during the Ebola crisis. The commitment and dedication of your police officers has been and remains crucial in maintaining peace, stability and security in these extremely challenging and unprecedented times. Madam President, my briefing today will focus on the role of UN police in reforming, restructuring and rebuilding host state policing institutions. Based on my experiences in Timor-Leste, working for the Australian Federal Police and in close coordination with the UN mission at there, and in Liberia as the head of the United Nations police component for UNMIL, I would like to discuss four key factors that I consider effective to police institution building. They are clear and specific mandates for policing, standardised and cohesive approaches on institution building, effective partnerships, and lastly, skills and expertise police components need to effectively build policing institutions. Firstly, developing clear and specific mandates for policing. The ability of police components to successfully implement mandates related to police institution building is dependent on being provided with operative language that is specific, realistic, and clearly acknowledges the political as well as the technical nature of policing reform. Mandates that outline specific critical reform areas would be of considerable assistance in successful institution building and mandate implementation. A number of missions have already benefited from such mandates, including Timor and Haiti. And this too is something UNMIL's police component is now focusing on in its impending mandate renewal next month. The establishment of governance and accountability mechanisms for the internal and external management of police is critical for institution building. However, these issues are frequently absent from policing mandates. This can result in reform of a more political nature, such as new policing legislation, or the establishing effective oversight mechanisms being neglected. In Liberia, 11 years since the end of conflict and the establishment of UNMIL, the legislative framework for the police remains piecemeal. However, focus on the development of a clear legislative framework at a much earlier stage would have addressed these organisational and institution limitations and provided a much stronger foundation for subsequent reform. For example, mandates which include a focus on implementing community-oriented policing strategies which often address deep-seated distrust of the police by the population would improve the more traditional security-focused mandates by adopting proven community-oriented policing processes and approaches to address law and order and security concerns. Secondly, there is a need for a standardised and cohesive approach to delivering capacity development at the start of a mission. Reform planning must be done in consultation with the host state and key stakeholders, with the necessary political buy-in to ensure national ownership, leadership, and sustainability. It is essential that the responsible ministry within the host state provides an overarching policy framework and identifies priorities for policing reform. It is also important to formalise the separation of powers between the ministry and the police to ensure independent policing institutions. These are sensitive issues, and the value of the head of the UN missions in utilising their good offices to promote these issues at the political level with host governments, communities and other stakeholders cannot be understated. Strategic reform planning, including benchmarking, must occur throughout the life cycle of peacekeeping missions and a transition and exit strategy must be progressed as these benchmarks are achieved. The approach taken by UN Police should include a strategic but joint development plan, utilising project management principles in achieving capacity building, capability development and reform goals, as well as setting clear targets which are underpinned by a robust monitoring and evaluation framework to measure progress and success. A good example of the joint development framework used in UNMIL and also adopted in Timor are clear examples of good approaches. Reform in such areas of governance structures, legal and regulatory frameworks, civilian and government oversight, ethical leadership and enabling services are all essential for sustainable democratic policing services and must be included in any strategic police development plan. Building professional institutions requires UN Police to help host state counterparts create efficient human resource systems, transparent budgeting and procurement processes, functioning logistics and fleet management structures, among others. In this respect, the Police Division's Strategic Guidance Framework for International Policekeeping will provide a sound model for building policing institutions and will allow for a more structured and standardised approach for UN Police. Thirdly, effective partnerships. The sustainability of host state police development efforts depends on a continued support post-UN peacekeeping. Partnership building with UN country teams, coupled with bilateral, multilateral, regional and local partners, is critical from the outset of the mission to enable close coordination and integration of priorities. Early engagement of partners at the start-up of a mission provides for a more collaborative and cooperative platform for development and reform and strengthens transitional arrangements at the end of any UN mission. For instance, in Liberia, the United States has better placed resources to continue building the capacity of specialised police resources, while Sweden has invested logistical and technical support in the development of host state police forensic capabilities. Additionally, further inclusion of police in the UN delivery as one context should be considered through a police development coordination framework to ensure a holistic and cohesive approach to donor activities in relation to police reform and institution building. The UN's global focal point has also been a useful initiative to coordinate rule of law partnerships, as it provides a mechanism for joint delivery and offers a single point for UN police, justice and corrections interventions. It has been successfully used in Liberia in relation to a number of projects designed to strengthen security sector responses during the Ebola crisis. Lastly, the skills and expertise police components need to effectively build police institutions. In many cases, successful institution building also calls for transforming organisation cultures. However, this is a significant time and resource-intensive process and takes years, even in well-developed organisations. At best, UN Police will be able to work with host state police colleagues to lay the foundations for a transformation process, such as establishing clear governance instruments, appropriate training, and revised incentive structures. But even this requires targeted, highly specialised skill sets that go way beyond the generous police profile that has constituted the bulk of police contributing contribution to UN policing over the years. Experts are needed in areas including finance, human resources, fleet and facility management, but also for strategic planning, legal and policy development, and project management. The complexity of police-related mandated tasks is growing, and at a time when demands for delivery are increasing and accelerating, whilst resources are becoming more constrained and scarce. The continuing mismatch between mandates and resources must invoke a candid discussion between missions, the Department of Peacekeeping Operations, and police contributing countries adds to the type of skill sets necessary for institution building that can be made available to peacekeeping operations, and how gaps can be filled with civilian police experts deployed within police components. I've seen the success of this model in Timor-Leste and in Liberia. When you have the right people with the right skills doing the right roles, the results are decisively positive. The challenges in obtaining appropriate skill sets are well known, and considerable efforts have been made over recent years to develop innovative approaches to address these challenges. However, we must recognise that challenges still remain. This is a key issue and could be considered further by the independent panel during their strategic review on peacekeeping operations and special political missions. Madam President, in closing, I believe the United Nations Department for Peacekeeping Operations is delivering on its police institution building mandate, but I also believe that we can collectively do more. Opportunities do exist for Member States, the Security Council, and the Secretariat to improve our readiness and our delivery. This can be achieved through careful and specific mandate development and implementation, which is based on lessons learnt and adapted to the evolving operating environments in which we find ourselves. Delivered through standardised international approaches to institution building that is supported by the correct mix of skills and expertise and is underpinned by committed and inclusive partnerships with all relevant actors. With your ongoing support and influence, we can successfully contribute to sustainable peace through efficient and effective delivery on police-related mandates. Madam President, thank you for affording me an opportunity to brief the Council on UN policing institution building. Thank you.
I thank Mr. Hines, a fine example of the Australian Federal Police on the international stage, and the Police Commissioner of UNMIL for his thoughtful briefing. I now give the floor to Mr. Fred Yeager.
Madam President, thank you very much for this opportunity to address the Security Council on issues that touch United Nations policing in the field. May I also say thank you for supporting South Sudan since 15th December, when hell broke loose and we went into what we are going through today. I hope my statement will be able to bring out the issues that need your attention in order to sort out peacekeeping in today's world. The performance of the UN police has clearly emerged as a critical one for the success of UN peacekeeping missions. Police officers are commonly seen in post-conflict settings dominated by military actors and continuing abuses of civilian populations as the bridge between transitional or new governments and these civilians. As the return to law and order and justice is a much-desired peace dividend. To effect and maintain true public order, management and peace in conflict-torn and fragile nations, the investment in the rebuilding of police institutions will always be critical. We must endeavor to strengthen this role in our peacekeeping operations and provide the UN with police officers that are capable within this arena. To achieve this, Madam President, the following issues will have to be addressed. Police contributing countries taking a closer look at selection, guidance, training, and skills selection before deployment to make sure that the needs of policekeeping operations are met. Number two, maintaining host nation police and UN police relationships without compromising United Nations principles of impartiality and within the requirements of the human rights due diligence policy. Number three, partnerships with regional organizations will need to be enhanced in setting host nation police standards and developing mission strategies. Member states need to ensure that police components are adequately equipped to do their work and that policing and police-related activities are firmly embedded in Security Council discussions, both thematic and country-specific. Madam President, let me tell you a little bit of what is happening in South Sudan to justify the statement I have just made. In South Sudan, the following stand out as immediate and long-term policing challenges and will need the attention of this August Council. True policing in South Sudan has never genuinely been offered to the South Sudanese people for the past 50 years. So the United Nations Police is holding the mantle to make sure that for the first time, good policing, true policing, is provided to the people of South Sudan. It has largely been done by combatants and former combatants whose ethos and experience are often those of a soldier in battle. South Sudan is largely a pastoralist and nomadic society, and the policing models require special skills, policies, and equipment to enable United Nations Police to do its work effectively. While the policies, for example, the strategic guidance framework, will help harmonize the policing practices that UN police personnel come with, the equipment will greatly facilitate their ability to face the daunting challenges of executing their work. For example, we are policing a rebel community in conditions of very high proliferation of arms, very high illiteracy, high poverty levels, disease, and extreme levels of criminality, murder, rape, defilement, and all the big categories of crime. The United Nations Police is in the middle of this kind of situation, and your support is going to be very crucial to make them perform this role. The events of 15th December last year ushered in a crisis that has left over 100,000 IDPs stranded and taking shelter within UNMISS sites. UN police requires special training and orientation, skills and equipment to cope with the challenges of policing these sites as mandated by the Security Council. Peacekeeping operations contribution to the building of policing institutions is limited in time. It must be premised on clear benchmarks, for example, improving basic law and order and security, which is a key peace dividend, and laying the foundations on which other partners will capitalize to continue with the process of police development in South Sudan. This will help define good exit strategies for DPKO. Madam President, members of the Security Council, let me conclude by restating the strategic objective of all peace processes. Bringing soldiers back to the barracks and police officers to the streets. This alone illustrates the need for your unreserved attention and support. In terms of equipment, I mentioned equipment, Madam President. We are looking for basic equipment. I could give an example. For example, mobile police units. A police unit you can set up within 5 minutes in a situation like a POC situation. This is the kind of equipment we are talking about. We are talking about, even if it was meals ready to eat, that would be a very, very big facilitation for our police officers. If you want something to eat it because it is readily available. I will stop here, Madam President. Thank you very much indeed for allowing me to do this.
Thank Mr. Yeager. as Police Commissioner of UNMISS for his excellent briefing, particularly in relation to the challenges in South Sudan. I now give the floor to Mr. Luis Carrillo.
Merci.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam President. Excellencies, allow me first to convey my sincere congratulations to Australia and to all the members of the Security Council for having organized this meeting. It is a great honor for me to participate in these discussions and to be able to brief the honorable members of the Security Council on our actions on the matters of protection of civilians, POC, and the participation of women in the PKOs working in peace and security. Regarding the protection of civilians, POC, Madam President, ladies and gentlemen, we have seen the implementation of a POC strategy, and this has been recognized as a cross-cutting responsibility applicable to all mission components. However, my briefing will be looking specifically at the activities undertaken by the police components. The police components represent the front line of protection of and contact with the local populations. The police components play an important role in POC and in capacity building for local police forces. Beyond the security role, UNPOL, the UN police, participates in rebuilding trust between the population and their police. Beyond preventative diplomacy, the UN police contributes to POC working particularly on two fronts. A protection from physical violence is one, and the establishment also of a protective environment is the second. Protection from physical violence, this for the police component, involves preventing, deterring, and if necessary, responding to situations in which civilians find themselves under threat of physical violence. Police activities include, among other things, patrols, the protection of the freedom of movement, and road security in order to allow for humanitarian aid and the protection of refugees, REN refugee aid, as well as generally in keeping public order. For MINUSCA, the mandate stipulates that POC is the priority. Specifically, UNPOL participates in the protection of civilians, offering operational support to the national security forces, supporting also the population directly. I might offer the following as examples. There is an integrated flashpoint matrix working together with all mission components. There are security patrols 24/7 undertaken by the FPUs, the foreign police units, and there are joint patrols with the International and Central African Security Forces. UNPOL has activated repeatedly to extract and make safe civilians that find themselves in dangerous situations. Now, MINUSTA, in the framework of the fight against organized crime, significant joint operations have been conducted with the Haitian police. The MINUSTA police and military components assist the Haitian police in anti-crime operations that have allowed for the apprehension of numerous criminals and for the seizure of significant quantities of weapons and drugs. MINUSTA has implemented a Keeping the Peace plan for the at-risk camps. UNPOL has permanent focal points as well. They are working in the seven largest IDP camps. Turning to the creation of a protective environment. For us, this activity is based on providing assistance to the national security forces and on promoting a respect for human rights. Turning to MINUSCA, the police networks to capture perpetrators caught red-handed, and also in applying UTMs, urgent temporary measures. On 7 November 2014, the MINUSCA police, together with their military colleagues, were able to apprehend and transfer to the national authorities 107 criminals that had conducted or perpetrated serious crimes. MINUSCA. UNPOL offers support taking the form of specialized training, specifically in the fight against sexual violence. I will now turn to initiatives that have been implemented. In New York, there is POC training. In 2011, DPKO finalized the first program on POC in pre-deployment training. The training modules are aimed at establishing a common understanding of POC. MINUSCA. The MINUSCA police has designated focal points that work with the other mission components on matters related to the protection of civilians, and this translates into permanent work on the ground. MINUSCA. The Working Group on Protection has created a manual for police and military alike. This manual explains the concept of protection of civilians. It offers concrete examples of problems that police and military might have to face. Turning to the question of women, peace, and security, I would say the following. One of the important measures taken by DPKO is that of increasing the amount of female police in our ranks. It is thus that the UN launched in 2000 and then again in 2009 what is referred to as the global effort. This targets an increase to 20% of women police in our forces in 2014. This initiative includes dialogues with PCCs and the creation of an international network of women police officers. Further, there is a pilot training program and a selection process for women police that has allowed for the unprecedented nomination of 2,000 women. In 2014, there were three training courses offered in Rwanda, Burkina Faso, and Cameroon. The presence of women in UNPOL increases the mission's ability to establish trusting relationships with the population and with women in particular. The role of female police officers is essential when it comes to creating an environment in which the victims, specifically of rape and sexual violence, feel a sufficient level of trust to come forth and report the crimes. The police components throughout all missions, use the police presence to improve access and support of populations, particularly the women population, when it comes to also raising awareness among the national authorities in the area of problems tied to gender. Some examples. In MINUSCA, the police have implemented a gender unit. It is specially dedicated to the prevention of and fight against sexual violence in the IDP camps. UNPOL also is seeking to increase recruitment and the deployment of women in the different police precincts. The presence of women police officers in UNPOL contributes to the acceptance of women and serves as an example to their male colleagues. In Timor-Leste, the police component has created a unit for vulnerable peoples, VPUs. It is tasked with investigating domestic violence, sexual abuse, and the traffic and human smuggling and trafficking in humans and offering protection to the victims of sexual crimes. The unity has so far during the transition, integrated into the Criminal Investigations Division of the National Police in Timor-Leste. There is also cooperation between UNPOL and their local interlocutors and counterparts to include women in the National Police. Female police networks have been created in peacekeeping operations and have created been created in the following mission in a great many missions, including MINUSCA, UNMISS, 2S's MINUSTA, MINUSCO, UNMIL, among others. These UNPOL networks have allowed for the implementation of similar networks in local police services. With regard to the reform, these structural reform of national police, UNPOL is encouraging local police to establish quotas for the recruitment of women. Many countries have established such quotas. This includes Liberia, which, with the support of UNMIL, has established a 20% quota. In Afghanistan, the UNAMA police section plays a coordination role and offers technical advisory support when it comes to the implementation of the Afghan Democratic Policing Project. This program is aimed at capacity building among female police officers, improving access also thus to justice for women and children. What are the challenges that have been found by UNPOL? Security Council resolutions, first. The best way to guide the missions to include the police components is to ensure that the resolutions are explicit regarding the priority activities and the resources that have been authorized. Secondly, the transition between different PKOs, as was the case with African Union and the UN in MINUSCA. There is a need to increase the amount of female police officers. Despite the efforts that have been deployed, the road ahead remains long. Certain challenges are tied to recruiting obstacles arising from directives or existing practices in the member state in question. It is important to reiterate our call to member states to consider the implementation of a policy aimed at deploying 20% of their police force as women police officers among their troops. In conclusion, Madam President, solid leadership, such as that which we have in MINUSCA within DPKO and the police division, is necessary when it comes to defining and implementing those strategies that allow for the implementation of police mandates that are conferred unto UNPOL by the Security Council. And I thank you for this opportunity to express this. I should like to underscore that we will do all we can to continue to ensure the credibility of the United Nations Police, including in its POC mission, and thus contribute to preserving the trust placed in the Security Council. Madam President, I thank you.
I thank Mr. Carrillo as Police Commissioner of MINUSCA for his informative briefing. It is my understanding that the Council is ready to proceed to the vote on the draft resolution before it. Members of the Council have before them document S/2014/828, the text of a draft resolution submitted by Australia, Chad, France, Jordan, Lithuania, Luxembourg, Nigeria, the Republic of Korea, the United Kingdom, and the United States of America. I shall put the draft resolution to the vote now. Will those in favour of the draft resolution contained in document S/2014/828 please raise their hand? The result of the voting is as follows. The draft resolution received 15 votes in favour. The draft resolution has been adopted unanimously as Resolution 2185-2014. Excellencies, I will now make a statement in my capacity as the Minister for Foreign Affairs of Australia. Australia deeply appreciates the important role of policing in peacekeeping and peace building, reflecting the lessons we have learned as a contributor to peace operations in our region of the Indo-Pacific, from Cambodia to Solomon Islands to Timor-Leste and elsewhere. We are pleased that the Council is focusing on policing issues in countries emerging from conflict. Australia's close friend and neighbour, Timor-Leste, provides a striking example of the vital importance of building effective host nation police and other law enforcement institutions. In 2006, 4 years after Timor-Leste's independence, violence broke out in Dili, with Timorese police and military fighting each other in the streets, dozens of deaths and over 150,000 people displaced. The Council authorised a new peacekeeping operation, UNMIT, and Australia led an international stabilisation force, including 200 Australian police. The focus of these police transitioned over time from stabilisation to institution building. Just 2 years later, Timor-Leste faced another shock: dual assassination attempts against President Ramos Horta and Prime Minister Guzmão. Yet overall, law and order remained intact. This was due to Timor-Leste's efforts in the interim, with United Nations and other international support, to build its own police and other rule of law institutions. Police are the public face of security, to whom populations should turn for protection. That's why the work of the United Nations on policing is so vital. It can repair the community's faith and trust in local authorities, build a sense of safety and security, and lay the groundwork for long-term stability and development. Australia has invested heavily in international police peacekeeping. The Australian Federal Police International Deployment Group is one of the world's few standalone deployable police peacekeeping capacities and the first in the world to receive United Nations recognition for its pre-deployment training. In the last 12 months alone, the group provided training to over 3,500 law and justice officials from 20 nations. This year, we celebrate 50 years of Australian police contributions to United Nations peacekeeping. Over the years, there has been a massive increase in the number of police deployed by the United Nations. Just 20 years ago, there were around only 1,600 police in United Nations missions. Today, there are over 12,300. And the policing-related mandates authorised by the Council have become increasingly complex. We must ensure that the United Nations police components are as effective as possible in achieving those mandates. This meeting and the resolution we have just adopted are landmark steps. The resolution includes clear and strategic guidance for UN police and practical, concrete measures to improve their effectiveness. It reflects the breadth of contemporary developments in UN policing, including adoption of modern technologies and use of specialised police teams in areas such as sexual and gender-based violence and complex serious crime. It articulates the relevance of policing across the areas of focus of the Council, from protection of civilians, which is central to all the United Nations work, to combating transnational organised crime and terrorism, countering violent extremism and fighting impunity. I will highlight three elements. First, training, standards and guidance. Over 100 countries contribute police to UN missions, each with their own nuanced policing approaches. The resolution calls on the Secretary-General to continue to work on unified standards, guidance and training. Second, building police institutions is vital to the United Nations work on justice, corrections and the rule of law. But it's not easy. It requires highly specialised skills. The resolution asks the Secretary-General to focus on ensuring police components have the right expertise to achieve this. The political dimensions of reform can often be as important as technical aspects. The Secretary-General's envoys must make this a focus of their good officers' work. Many arms of the United Nations work on policing reform and the resolution calls for better coordination of these efforts. Third, women, peace and security. To be effective, police must recognise the particular needs of women. The best way to ensure this is to involve women in outreach and decision-making and to have more women police, so police forces better reflect the diversity of the communities in which they operate and can better respond to their needs. A useful example is Vanuatu, where Australia funded the establishment of female police barracks, allowing large numbers of women to participate in and graduate from recruit training and in turn become mentors and role models. This has helped dramatically redress the gender imbalance in the Vanuatu police force. This issue was also raised by Mr. Ladsous, and I ask Commissioner Carrillo, what more can we do to encourage and support more women to join police forces in countries hosting United Nations missions? Today's resolution paves the way for continued Council focus on policing issues, including an annual meeting with heads of police components to ensure the Council's decisions on policing are informed by the actual experiences of police components in the field. And it makes the case for the Secretary-General's forthcoming strategic review of peace operations to deal with policing issues. Policing is an integral part of the United Nations peacekeeping and peacebuilding work. Importantly, the development of effective, accountable and community-focused policing institutions is an integral part of responsible exit strategies for peacekeeping operations. It is Australia's objective that today's meeting and resolution make a practical contribution to enduring peace, security and stability. I resume my function as President of the Council. I now give the floor to other members of the Security Council. I now give the floor to the representative of Rwanda.
Madam President, thank you for convening this important briefing on expanding role of policing in peacekeeping and post-conflict peacebuilding. Your presence here today aptly gives this meeting the merit it warrants. I also thank Hervé Latsous, Under Secretary General for Peacekeeping Operations, and our police commissioners, Greg Hinds of UNMIL, Fred Yeager of UNMIS, and Luis Miguel Carrillo of MINUSCA for their informative presentations. As the concept note prepared by the Australian Presidency reminds us, the last 20 years have seen an unprecedented growth of police components in peacekeeping and special political missions. This is due to the changing nature of peacekeeping, which for the past years is increasingly facing situations where there is no peace to keep and where mass atrocities are committed. Therefore, the role of the police has become more important and more complex as it moved away from its traditional mission of observation to that of protection of civilians. Police in peacekeeping missions is also called to provide operational policing support across the whole spectrum of policing duties, including protection of VIPs, security of key installations, escort duties, crowd control, and humanitarian assistance. This is done in parallel to the crucial mandate of supporting host countries, both in conflict and post-conflict settings, in strengthening the rule of law through rebuilding and reforming their policing and other law enforcement institutions. This has flowed from the recognition of the central role of the host state policing institutions, the role that host state policing institutions can play in the restoration and maintenance of law and order, security and stability in post-conflict contexts, including in building trust between the government and population, with police officers often the main interface between the government and community on security issues. Madam President, as the seventh largest UN police contributing country, Rwanda is well aware of these rapidly growing demands on the police component, and this operational context has guided us in the ways we prepared our contingents. In recognition of the importance of the police component of peacekeeping operations, Rwanda supported Resolution 2185 we just adopted, which outlines practical steps to improve the effectiveness of police components in UN peacekeeping operations and special political missions, as the need for the policing as need for policing expands in peacekeeping and post-conflict peacebuilding environments. We are very much aware of the importance of the police contingent in peacekeeping operations. Nonetheless, it is important that this Council takes serious note of the letter sent by the Coordinating Bureau of the Non-Aligned Movement to the President of this Council, reminding that UN policing is an integral part of the United Nations peacekeeping operations, and that the Security Council should not act in any way to encroach the mandate of the General Assembly, especially the mandate of the Special Committee on Peacekeeping Operations C-34 of the UNGA 4th Committee. As we know, a mission is best executed when using an integrated and coordinated approach. Therefore, all components of peacekeeping operations, mostly the military and police, are very much compatible and complementary. Madam President, I have just a few comments and questions for the heads of police components that are here with us today, as requested in the concept note. On UNMIL, we of course, thank Commissioner Greg Hines and his entire team for their efforts in their support to the government of Liberia's response to Ebola. We would be grateful to hear you speak more on the progress in the implementation of the UNMIL roadmap relating to reforming and restructuring the Liberian police force and law and order institutions, especially factoring in the Ebola outbreak. Also, we would be grateful if you could share with us your experience of Liberian police force throughout the territory of Liberia, the deployment throughout the territory of Liberia. On MINUSCA, the UN police has a critical role to play in protecting civilians, reestablishing the rule of law, and assisting the transitional government in the fight against impunity. Question for Commissioner Carrillo. Given the challenging operating environment, how can the Council ensure that individual police officers and foreign police units are adequately equipped and appropriately trained to carry out their mandate? And what do they need to, in order to perform their mandated tasks that they don't already have? And do you think that deploying more specialized protection or support units will boost MINUSCA's efforts to protect civilians? And if so, are there certain areas of expertise that you urgently need to fill? I have also a question for Commissioner Fred Yiga. UNMIS mandate was reinforced to improve the protection of civilians, the monitoring of human rights, and to support implementation of the cessation of hostilities agreement. Are there best practices that UNMIS police could share with others in implementing out this mandate? I think this question also can be answered by other police commissioners on the best practices in their missions. And we all know that the government of South Sudan has a primary responsibility to protect its people. And if we foresee a time when UNMIS will hand over these tasks to the South Sudanese authorities, it is important that we find ways to build their capacities. We were told that you recently trained the South Sudanese police. Is there a framework that you put in place to monitor and couch your trainees in implementing their police duties? For both Commissioners Carrillo and Yiga, I have an additional question. Given the need to be able to rapidly respond to violence, the violence in South Sudan and the Central African Republic, how are you reinforcing coordination with the military component of the mission? Is the division of labor and areas of responsibility between the military and police clear, and do you see some overlaps? And on a final note, Madam President, allow me to share Rwanda's experience as one of the highest contributors of female police officers to UN missions. As the Rwandan constitution requires the appointment of at least 30% of women in decision-making organs, A third of Rwandan police officers are women. Therefore, we have been able to deploy female police to UN missions who are fulfilling critical tasks as IPOs and FPU members in policing communities, connecting with local women, and offering expertise in reporting and investigation in sexual and gender-based violence. Unfortunately, not all countries have reached the point where they can draw from large pools of qualified female candidates ready for deployment to the field or to UN headquarters for senior directorship posts. Perhaps relaxing some of the rigid recruitment requirements, like requiring 15 years of relevant experience in some cases, would allow more member states who want to contribute females to female officers to step up and do so. It is, of course, necessary for member states to create incentives for women to enter the police forces, but it also requires a little creativity and flexibility from the UN Secretariat without compromising the quality of the candidates. I thank you, Madam President.
Excellencies, I will provide an opportunity for our briefers to respond to questions after the statements have concluded, and I thank the representative of Rwanda for his statement. I acknowledge the significant contribution that Rwanda makes to United Nations policing, including, as I understand, the fourth largest contributor of female police officers. I now give the floor to the representative of Luxembourg.
Madame la Présidente.
Madam President, Luxembourg thanks Australia for organising this first meeting of the Security Council on the role of United Nations police in peacekeeping and peacebuilding. The fact that you yourself have presided over this meeting, Madam Minister, demonstrates your country's commitment to this matter. I also thank the Under-Secretary General for peacekeeping operations of Ilatsus and the Commissioners Greg Hines, Fred Yeager and Luis Miguel Carrillo for their briefings. This morning, by adopting Resolution 2185, the first standalone resolution on policing, the Security Council has made a practical and useful contribution towards peacekeeping, peacebuilding, and reform of the security sector. Luxembourg has been a co-sponsor of the resolution initiated by Australia. As recalled in the basic document, the concept document for this meeting, there's been unprecedented efforts. Missions increasingly are complex and diverse. They act in increasingly difficult situations that swiftly can deteriorate. The briefings that we've just heard from the heads of police components in Liberia, South Sudan, and Central African Republic have shown us this. It's therefore legitimate for the Security Council to pay increased attention to police components. Madam President, protection of civilians is central to the mandate of most UN peacekeeping operations. Police components are a key actor for the due implementation of this mandate. It is therefore essential, as was recalled this morning, for police components to be well trained and qualified and for them to be aware of the need for civilian protection. It's essential for them to have capacities and resources necessary to effectively protect civilians, particularly women and children, who are the first victims of conflict. Today, as we commemorate the 25th anniversary of the adoption of the Convention on the Rights of the Child, we welcome the fact that the resolution that we have just adopted has taken this aspect into account. Indeed, Resolution 2185 reiterates that protection of children in armed conflict must be an important aspect of any overall strategy for conflict settlement and peace building. It also underscores the importance of strengthening coordination between police components and advisors responsible for protection of children and protection of women. And it encourages the training of police prior to their deployment, with scenario bases to strengthen their abilities to prevent sexual violence and gender-based violence and their abilities to protect children. This provision is in line with Resolution 2143 on children in armed conflict. In the interactive spirit of this meeting, I would like to ask Commissioners Yiga and Kariya to tell us how they consider the way in which protection of women and children is being implemented in the field in South Sudan and in Central African Republic. How is coordination between the police component and advisors responsible for protection of children and protection of women functioning as part of UNMISS and MINUSCA? Has the appointment of specific focal points for protection of children within police components helped to strengthen further this coordination? And more generally speaking, what are the measures that could be taken within the Security Council to strengthen the capacities of police components in UNMISS and MINUSCA in order to protect civilians? Allow me to now say a few words about the issue of women, peace and security. As the Undersecretary General for Peacekeeping Operations has noted, it is clear that women police make an essential contribution to the work of police components, especially when missions need to interact with women affected by sexual violence in conflict. It is therefore important to redouble efforts in order to increase their number and to eliminate any obstacles to the participation of women in police components. Women police also need to be able to have access to all levels of responsibility in the field and at UN headquarters. As guardians of the peace, police are the most visible face of the state for citizens. They need to meet the most stringent criteria in terms of professionalism, their qualities and discipline. In this respect, the mentoring dimension in the training of national police by UN police components, we believe, is essential, as is the training of more senior officials. I take this opportunity to ask Commissioner Hines, what are the specific measures being taken in Liberia to ensure that capacity building of national Liberian police is lasting? In other words, that the mission can function in the long term without support. I would like to conclude by expressing my deep-seated gratitude for the more than 2,500 police deployed as part of peacekeeping operations and special political missions of the United Nations. Alongside peacekeepers and civilian personnel, these police carry out essential work, often in difficult conditions, to implement the mandates defined by our council. We hail their commitment and that of the memory of those who have given their lives in the exercise of their duties in the service of the United Nations. Thank you.
I thank the representative of Luxembourg for her heartfelt statement and for Luxembourg's support for the resolution adopted this morning. I now give the floor to the representative of the United States.
Thank you, Foreign Minister Bishop. Thank you for being here and chairing today's session, the first ever Security Council session dedicated to policing, one of the most important tools in our collective arsenal to prevent violence and conflict. Your presence here, Madam Minister, is a testament to Australia's deep and enduring commitment to improving UN policing in the context of peacekeeping operations. I had the privilege recently of engaging with Commissioner Hines, the Australian head of UN police in Liberia, and he was extremely impressive in a very difficult operating environment. Of course, every one of the missions represented here are difficult operating environments of different kinds. So thank you, gentlemen, for your great leadership. We meet at a time of growing demand for UN police in peacekeeping missions. In April, the UN Security Council authorized the deployment of 1,800 UN police for a single peacekeeping mission in the Central African Republic. That is more than all the UN police who were deployed in every peacekeeping mission in 1994, when there were only 1,677 all told. In 2012, there were 56 authorized foreign police units. Today, there are 72. That kind of differential in just a two-year period. The increasing demand for UN police reflects our evolving understanding of their role. We recognize that UN police are central to ensuring the overarching objective of peacekeeping missions, which is not merely to stop conflicts, but to build a sustainable peace in their place. As such, what we ask of UN police has evolved, too, from passive monitoring of the performance of local police to taking on many law enforcement duties and training host country forces. This is logical. If one of the main reasons we need peacekeeping missions in the first place is the fragility or utter lack of public security, then it follows logically that for countries to be able to protect their own people and for peacekeeping missions to be able to wind down eventually, we need to strengthen host country law enforcement. Our ability to build more accountable professional police in host countries is the sine qua non of broader efforts to reestablish, or in some instances, to establish for the first time, the rule of law. That is why the United States is investing in strengthening UN police forces. This year alone, we've provided training for 15 foreign police units, which are deployed to five different UN peacekeeping missions, and provided equipment to ensure the swift deployment of UN police units from Benin, Burkina Faso, Senegal, and Togo. And it is why we commend the recent commitments of police personnel announced by Bangladesh, China, Finland, Mongolia, Nepal, and Rwanda, which were announced at the peacekeeping summit co-chaired by Vice President Biden in September. These contributions are critical to filling the gap between current capacity and current need. UN police are showing they can handle complex duties such as protecting civilians and maintaining law and order. In South Sudan, it is the responsibility of just three UN foreign police units made up of 350 police from Bangladesh and Nepal, together with 500 UN individual police officers, to provide internal security in nine camps that are providing shelter to approximately 100,000 internally displaced persons. People who support the government and people who oppose it live in close proximity in these camps, as do people from ethnic groups that have been pitted against one another in South Sudan's brutal civil war, making the job of policing the camps an extremely challenging one. The UN gets and deserves a great deal of credit for opening its gates in South Sudan to the people fleeing violence, but it is also worth singling out the UN police who are responsible for preventing violence once people are inside those gates. In the Central African Republic capital of Bangui, five formed police units and 100 individual police officers, together with a pair of military battalions, are fully responsible for public security in the city from 4 p.m. to 8 a.m. every single day. Given the rising demand for and the demands on UN police, it is remarkable that this is our first ever Security Council session dedicated to the issue, and the first time Council members are being briefed by police contingents. This is indicative of a broader lack of communications from the field to the Council. The Council will benefit tremendously from having more visibility into challenges and problems in the field. We need to establish fluid lines of communication that allow missions to swiftly share information from the field. And this should just not mean Security Council sessions like this one. We should have multiple means of securing regular feedback on what is working and what is not. That will make operations more accountable and more effective, and we will be more helpful in supporting you in your hours of need. Rising demands and responsibilities are also why we need to do a better job of tracking performance. To that end, we welcome the development of the strategic guidance framework and, in particular, the focus on human rights, protection of civilians, and transparency. The U.S. government participated in the regional consultation on the framework in Norway, and we found the session appropriately critical and constructive. This approach, learning in real time from the successes and failures from the field and bringing member states into the discussion, is the right one to address the increasingly complex challenges faced by UN police. Now, for the framework to be effective in the real world, it must be made actionable for police leadership on the ground, and we must keep adapting and improving upon the framework based on the feedback of those who know best. In that spirit, we see our questions today to police commissioners as an initial exchange in what we want to be a much more regular back and forth. I have two questions in closing. First, the protection of civilians is central to the mandates of modern peacekeeping operations. It is also a fundamental responsibility of law enforcement. Yet, as we have often highlighted in the Council, in practice, missions routinely fail to live up to this mandate. What are your views, all of you active in areas where this issue has arisen at some point in the mission life, on how police in particular can help implement the mandate to protect civilians? What obstacles have you encountered in fulfilling this responsibility? Do the police under your command have clear guidance on what protection of civilians entails and how it should be carried out? And what steps can you take or have you taken in the field to ensure that police from very different policing cultures and from different contributing countries have similar interpretations of what protection of civilians means? This is, of course, an issue also on the troop contributor side, but this bears exposition and exploration on the policing side. Second and finally, Madam President, understanding the critical role police can play in building up host country capacities of law enforcement bodies, one of our collective challenges is balancing the need to provide law and order in circumstances where there is a policing vacuum, while at the same time rapidly and intensely training local police so they can reassume their responsibilities. The presence of international police cannot become an excuse for local police not to step up, and that is a risk. I'd love it if you could, each of you could speak to this question of balancing the need to actually provide law and order when civilians are in need of security with the need not to become a crutch for host countries, and it's a very, very challenging issue. And any insight you can offer as to anything the Council can do to remove the obstacles that you have on the ground in strengthening host country law enforcement. Thank you.
Thank you, Ambassador Power, for your statement, and I particularly thank the United States for its support for the resolution adopted this morning. I now give the floor to the representative of Lithuania.
Madam President, I would like to thank Undersecretary General Latsous as well as Commissioners Heinz, Iga and Carrillo for their briefings. Lithuania welcomes the adoption of the first standalone resolution on UN police, which we were happy to co-sponsor. We appreciate this first ever opportunity for the Security Council to speak directly with the heads of UN police components. It should become a regular event, a regular practice, and as interactive as possible. With UN peacekeeping becoming increasingly multidimensional, the success of a mission more than ever depends not just on a military component, but also on its skilled police officers, who are at the front line of stopping community violence, supporting victims, holding criminals accountable, and helping build national justice institutions. A dedicated council discussion on UN police was long overdue. The growth of UN police components started with the deployment of former Yugoslavia in the early 1990s and has continued ever since. The number of UN police has increased twofold in the last 15 years and now accounts for over 12% of UN uniformed personnel. UN police is deployed in 12 out of 16 UN peacekeeping missions. Only a few years after joining the UN, Lithuania started deploying police officers to missions in Croatia, Bosnia and Herzegovina, and Kosovo. Today, our officers are present in Haiti, Liberia, and Cyprus, as well as in European Union and OSCE missions in Afghanistan and Ukraine. Let me briefly focus on two topics selected for today's discussion, protection of civilians and importance of police training. Protection of civilians by the police components is often at the front and center of UN police deployment. While military components intervene to protect civilians under imminent threat, UN police provides a key contribution through patrolling in areas of increased risk, public order management, facilitating delivery of humanitarian assistance, and ensuring security in refugee and IDP camps. Nowhere is this more evident than in Liberia, where challenges faced by unmilled police officers and Liberian National Police in fighting the Ebola outbreak are enormous and deserve our respect and admiration. At the same time, the outbreak exposed persisting weaknesses of the Liberian police force, such as insufficient skills and mobility, a lack of accountability, and corruption. These shortcomings will need to be addressed once the crisis of Ebola is behind us. In South Sudan, what started as a political crisis is now a humanitarian catastrophe with deep ethnic divides. The UNMISS police component has the tremendous task to operate in overcrowded camps amid rampant crime, increasing tensions along the ethnic lines, and ever-growing sexual violence. To ensure successful implementation of the realigned mandate, the mission should provide its personnel with mediation and community engagement skills. Additional deployment of women police officers would be essential to improve women and child protection and address sexual violence in displacement. In the Central African Republic, UN police will be instrumental in restoring law and order and stopping violence, violent crime and looting, yet the MINUSCA police officers should not be given a task that extends beyond their capabilities. A more robust UN military presence is needed to confront the heavily armed militias responsible for violations of ceasefire and attacks against civilians. Protection against sexual and gender-based violence remains a key priority in implementing protection of civilians' mandates. UN police is again expected to be at the forefront of effective response. In this regard, we welcome proactive approaches, such as deployment of a specialized UN police team in MINUSTA to support national police in preventing and investigating cases of sexual and gender-based violence, as well as outreach to sexual violence survivors by female-owned police officers in Liberia and Darfur. Furthermore, women police officers not just serve and protect, they also inspire local girls and women to stand up for their rights and to become active participants in their country's future. They serve as role models and encourage women to join national law and order and justice institutions, thus enabling them to contribute to the security of their communities long after the UN will be gone. Madam President, ensuring proper UN police training is both a challenge and an essential element of each mission. Officers often come from diverse national police forces with different perceptions about a police role in a community. In addition to unfamiliar location, they face most hostile environments, poor infrastructure, and difficulties dealing with the host state police authorities. The UN and contributing countries should do their utmost to ensure that the police, entire police component is prepared to act as a single team united by the mission's mandate. Just as the objectives of UN missions should be closely adapted to the situation of each host state, so should the training. While conducting actual police work might be necessary in countries where national law enforcement structures are weak or absent, it can only be an interim measure. UN police officers must be capable and willing to pass on their experience with a view to rebuilding host states' capabilities and handing over the policing to the national authorities, functioning within the framework of rule and law and democratic civilian oversight. Police components, including mission leadership, should receive relevant pre-deployment training, in particular on the protection of civilians, human rights, women and child protection, as well as addressing sexual and gender-based violence. In this regard, we welcome the adoption of DPOODFS guidelines of UN police implementing protection of civilian mandates. Finally, the UN police must ensure it remains close to the communities it serves. Speaking to the local language is often indispensable for an effective implementation of community policing and training of national police authorities. We welcome the partnership of the International Organization of La Francophonie and a police division aimed at increasing the number of Francophone police officers. Madam President, before concluding, I would like to ask a few questions to the participating police commissioners. With regard to UNMISS, what additional measures are being taken to ensure that UNMISS police officers have sufficient skills to mediate, diffuse tensions, and address the needs of the victims of sexual and gender-based violence? With regard to MINUSCA, how will UNPOL assist the national authorities in arresting individuals responsible for crimes and violence? And with regard to UNMIL, how will the mission adapt its efforts in building Liberian national police following the lessons learned during the Ebola crisis? I thank you, Madam President.
I thank the representative of Lithuania for her statement and for Lithuania's support for the resolution that we've adopted this morning. I now give the floor to the representative of France.
Merci, Madame la Présidente.
Thank you, Madam President. I would also like to start by thanking Mr. Velazos, Undersecretary General, and all of the heads of the police components that we heard this morning. I thank them for their specific, very useful message, a message that allows us to take stock of the importance of the role played by police components in peacekeeping operations, a message that also makes us understand the challenges ahead. I also would like to pay tribute to the women and men who make up these police components. I pay tribute to them for their commitment and devotion in the service of the cause that we're defending here at the United Nations. I'd also like to thank you, Madam President, for organising today's debate and for this first resolution of the Security Council on policing a resolution which recognizes major changes in peacekeeping and the transformations that have occurred. It can be explained by the strategic evolutions and changes in conflicts which have led to systematizing the presence of police components in multidimensional PKOs. These police components today are making an essential contribution, and I think this has been well recognized today, towards stabilizing situations. I'd just like to focus on four major aspects of the increased role of police in peacekeeping operations. First, in qualitative terms, the effective contribution of police components to civilian protection, together with other components of PKOs, requires that police or gendarmes be well equipped, not only for their own protection, but also that they have necessary communications resources to have a strong chain of command and be responsive and mobile units. They need to be trained for specific missions, including in combating violence against women and children. Many of us have said that. The deployment of women police here is an essential aspect to take into account to reassure vulnerable victims of human rights violations. Achieving this mission is vital since local police will help progressively to rebuild trust between the population and local police forces. Second, these changes require the need for more staff and expertise. This is a message that you yourself and the heads have mentioned. Apart from the traditional public security missions, the police components of our missions are also required for rebuilding and developing the policing capacities of host countries. In liaison with host countries, the police component of peacekeeping now need to be further supported through more specialization based on specific expertise that is recognized, as well as the ability of police to speak the host country languages. The success of the Minister team, which is responsible for training Haitian police to combat sexual violence and gender-based violence, I believe is a good example of this. Strong mobilization by member states should make it possible to further deploy such gender teams for PKOs in host countries. On this issue, we should also focus on the need to transfer to host countries standardized norms and not national police expertise in order to facilitate national ownership. I would like to welcome in this regard the work already done and underway by the police division of DPKO, which for several years now has been establishing operational guidelines and standards, particularly the strategic guidance framework. Third and lastly, combating organized crime to support the host country and to rebuild its capacities should be an integral part of policing activities in operations. Transnational organized crime sometimes is associated with terrorism, and an overall approach is needed. We believe that greater cooperation between the Secretariat, host countries, regional and sub-regional organizations, Interpol, and regional police organizations could be achieved through training, sharing of operational information and expertise. Naturally, this should go along with increasing the close cooperation between police and justice, which would contribute towards the same final objective, rebuilding the population's trust and neutralizing criminals and thereby making it possible to rebuild rule of law. In this regard, and further to the previous questions posed, I would like to ask Commissioner Carrillo to ask him if he could tell us a bit more about the Joint Task Force for Bangui, particularly its role in civilian protection. We believe that this experience is a very interesting development. Perhaps it could be a model for other UN policing activities. And in conclusion, Madam President, naturally, I'd like to underscore that the UN policing challenges remain several-fold. Good coordination between police components, for example, with civilian and military components, the need for ownership by host countries, the use of modern-day technology to protect personnel and in the discharge of their missions, as already said, the need to speak the host country language to restore confidence between the local population and the state institutions. This should enable us to have a UN police that is more professional and effective. Recommendations of the expert panel on the strategic review of peacekeeping should provide useful proposals in this regard, and France looks forward to these recommendations with great interest and reiterates its readiness to contribute towards this debate. Thank you.
I thank the representative of France for his statement and for the issues that he has raised, and I acknowledge France's support for the resolution we have adopted this morning. I now give the floor to the representative of Jordan.
Shukran, Sayyidati Ra'isa.
I thank you, Madam President. Your Excellency, Foreign Minister Bishop, allow me to also convey my warmest congratulations for this precious initiative. I am fully appreciative of the exceptional role played by the police components of the UN in PKOs and in the SPMs as well. I am pleased to also thank Mr. Hervé Ladsous, the USG for PKOs. Thank you for your exhaustive briefing on the challenges found by the police components working in PKOs. My thanks go also to all of the police commissioners working in PKOs, whether it's in Liberia, South Sudan, or the Central African Republic. Thank you for your information on expertise, training, operations, and skill when it comes to ensuring the success of PKOs. We also appreciate the briefing on the protection of civilians and women. Madam President, we hail the men and women of all nationalities that have served under the banner of the United Nations in keeping the peace. We hail the blue helmets that have undertaken the most noble of acts to help prevent armed conflict beginning in the Middle East. As a Jordanian, we are proud to be among these states that have contributed significantly to international efforts to keep international peace and security. We are very much convinced of this noble approach. We have formed at the highest level. Our commitment to this comes from our unflagging commitment to respect human rights and rule of law, moving toward a safe and sustainable environment, ensuring stability and life, a decent life, for populations suffering from war and conflicts. Jordan has participated since 1983 and to today in 20-plus PKOs and in several UN SPMs as well. We have participated under different mandates, peacebuilding and peacekeeping. This has been characterized by reform and capacity building in the police. Our experienced officers have also participated in these. They have contributed to these efforts. The amount of our troops in the UN missions is of 21,556. Regarding our counselors, we have 5,254 police officers participating. Madam President, as you know, the improvement of the performance level and the capacity of the police component is an urgent need when it comes to bearing in mind the provisions of resolutions adopted by the Security Council recently, with an increase in demand for the police component quantitatively and regarding their expertise when it comes to participating in PKOs and in peacebuilding exercises. Given the complexity of these tasks, the police have evolved from traditional roles limited to oversight and monitoring to capacity building, depending on the different capacity and skill areas. The draft resolution on the police component presented by Australia, for which we thank you, is a cornerstone of our work, and it is very much in harmony with the guiding strategic framework that has been adopted and improved on by the police section within DPKO. Madam President, the draft resolution shows the crucial role of the police component in the PKOs, as well as addressing practical measures to improve the police performance in the implementation of the different mandates. Through this resolution, the United Nations will be able to guarantee a participation of four member states in PKOs through officers and FPUs with specialized skills in step with international criteria in order to implement the mandates with professionalism and high skill. This will allow for us to promote security and reduce the catastrophic results of conflicts on the civilians, ensuring at the same time the protection from different types of physical and psychological torture and threats. There will be also strengthening of capacity in security in all its aspects. Madam President, Jordan is considered to be playing a leading role in participation in PKOs. Beyond the expertise that our country has obtained in this area, our officers are also experienced after years of service in PKOs and peace building. My government works to further hone this skill, increasing the capacity through a stepping up of specialized training to respond to the growing needs and diversified needs that we see in the wide array of tasks for which there is need. The high level of skill will also increase the trust of the citizens and civilians. There are training cycles that will use UN curriculum that helps the Jordanian officers to increase their skill levels in their FPUs and as advisors. But I have a question for the police commissioner from Liberia. What are the lessons learned, or rather, what could we add to the police experience regarding the Ebola crisis? We know that the police does not work in the medical field, but the police has had to tackle this challenge as well. And I have a question for the commissioners in general. To what degree, or what is the level of exhaustive and complementary planning between the military and the police and the local administrative authorities on the ground when it comes to implementing the mandate and increasing efficiency, avoiding also redundancies where possible? Lastly, we wish to thank the government of Australia for this very important initiative. It will have positive effects on the ground and in the performance of the police components in the different activities that they undertake. I thank you, Madam President.
I thank the representative of Jordan for her statement and Jordan's support for this resolution. I also acknowledge with sincere appreciation Jordan's contribution as, I believe, the largest provider of police to UN missions. I now give the floor to the representative of the United Kingdom.
Thank you, Madam President, and thank you very much indeed to our briefers today. I'd like to congratulate Australia on adopting the Security Council's first ever resolution on policing and for holding this inaugural briefing by heads of police components. It really is a great idea. The United Kingdom looks forward to this becoming at least an annual session, and we also look forward to hearing more from police components in the course of our normal Security Council business. We think that's an extremely important part of the work that we do. This debate, we think, is long overdue. The United Nations first deployed police in the Congo in 1960. In the last 20 years, there's been a significant increase in demand. The United States set out the figures, but it's an eightfold increase in 20 years. As we've heard from our briefers today, United Nations policemen and women are building the capacities of host state police, providing operational support, and in some cases, actually acting as interim police and protecting civilians. The need for effective UN police is likely to continue to increase in the future. The nature of conflict is changing. New challenges require this council to change how we respond. Deploying a large number of military troops may not always be the right approach to dealing with failing states. Instead, an effective United Nations policing component can sometimes be a more flexible and effective way to support countries. This is especially true in context in which the lines between political violence and criminal violence have become blurred. I thought that came out particularly clearly from Mr. Carrillo's briefing. And in that context, I'd like to just ask one question, which is, in the Central African Republic, where we have put a much stronger emphasis on policing in the mandate, have we got the balance right, or is it not enough? Moreover, as the military components of peacekeeping missions start to draw down, such as in Haiti, United Nations police could provide an important bridge. This model of a police-keeping mission could become a Security Council tool in the future. Madam President, an effective United Nations policing response to these new challenges requires that they place the safety and security of civilians at the centre of all their activities. Sir Robert Peel, who was the British Home Secretary who established London's Metropolitan Police in 1829, was the first to articulate the principles of policing by consent. Nearly 200 years later, these Peelian principles remain the central tenet of British policing and for many other countries around the world. Nowhere are these principles more important than in countries that have been ravaged by conflict. Stability requires citizens to trust their police and to perceive them as legitimate. We must work together to ensure that UN policing has the tools and the skills to help build police forces that focus on the welfare and security of citizens. Madam President, in order for the United Nations police components to achieve this, we would suggest focusing on three main areas, and I think they've come out very clearly from the briefings that we've heard this morning. First, we need reform at headquarters and in the field to strengthen international policing doctrine, standards, and training to ensure that the United Nations police is ready to face future challenge. We strongly support Australia's call for this today. There are several promising initiatives underway, including the development of strategic guidance framework, which is a single policy to guide all UN policing activity. Greg Hines spoke to this in his presentation, and it's important. But more needs to be done. For example, there is still no standardized approach to how training is delivered. We urge the Secretary-General's high-level panel review on peace operations to present us with bold and ambitious recommendations on how we can take action to improve UN policing. Second, we must get the right people with the right skills on the ground swiftly. We need to broaden and deepen the pool of available expertise, including the range of police contributing countries. Fred Yeager made that point very clear in the presentation that he gave us on South Sudan earlier. We need more female police officers, and we urge police division to do more to reach their 20% target. I think, frankly, that we all envy the statistics that Rwanda gave us about their own police force earlier today. Formed police units and individual police officers will remain critical. But we also need to deploy specialized teams with niche capabilities and skills, such as the ability to deal with sexual and gender-based crimes. And we need civilian policing experts that can work with development actors to build the capacities and institutions of the host state's police force. Thirdly, we need to improve coordination within the United Nations system and strengthen partnerships with other actors. An effective UN policing effort requires better joining up of all the United Nations departments and agencies working on these issues. We need a mission planning process that takes into account the comparative advantages of all the key UN actors working in the rule of law sectors and sequences their activity accordingly. And we need improved mechanisms to coordinate with international financial institutions and regional organizations who also operate in this area. The joint DPKO-UNDP Global Focal Point for Police, Justice and Corrections is a welcome step towards this on internal coordination, but more needs to be done. Madam President, the United Kingdom is committed to doing our part to support United Nations policing. We have UK officers deployed to Haiti, South Sudan and Iraq. We want to increase this support, especially through providing niche capabilities in areas such as organised crime, community policing, and sexual and gender-based violence. We're also at the forefront of donor efforts, working in 14 conflict-affected countries, spending $80 million on security and justice programs in 2013, and providing more than 10 million women with improved access to security and justice services. I've got two other questions that I just wanted to put to our briefers now that we have this opportunity. The first is the fact that you all raised the need for more specific mandates to help effective policing. We need more specific detail from the field of key challenges, and I think, again, that's come through very clearly from other members of the Security Council today. So my question is, what is your view, because we've, I think, begun to express ours, but what is your view on the best way to achieve this? And the second question for all of you is how you would measure success. We clearly need effective benchmarks to tell whether we're succeeding or failing in transitioning to host state police forces. But how would you achieve that? Finally, I don't want to lose this opportunity today to pay tribute to all of the men and women serving in United Nations police components across the world. As we discuss the challenges and reforms required to improve UN policing, we must never forget the risks that they take every single day to make our world a safer place. Today's debate is also an opportunity for me, on behalf of my government, to say thank you.
I thank the representative of the United Kingdom for his statement, and I acknowledge the United Kingdom's contribution to United Nations policing and peacekeeping. I now give the floor to the representative of the Russian Federation.
Madam President, we're grateful to the Undersecretary General for Peacekeeping Operations, Mr. Latsous, as well as the heads of the UN police components in Liberia, South Sudan and Central African Republic. We congratulate our Australian colleagues on the consensus adoption of their proposed draft resolution. We regard police components as an integral part of UN peacekeeping operations and special political missions. These components make their contribution towards implementing the unique mandate for each mission, determined by the specific situation of the country where they are deployed. Thanks to regular reporting in line with relevant mandates to the Security Council on missions mandates, member states are well informed about the processes taking place in the countries of deployment and in the missions themselves. However, we hope that today's discussion will help us to somewhat better understand the difficulties facing police components in the field while they carry out their tasks. Madam President, modern UN police have wide-ranging tasks before them, which is related to the increasingly complex and integrated nature of their missions mandates. They now have to not only observe situations and report on breaches of public order in the areas of their responsibilities, but also play an important auxiliary role in the post-conflict reform of law enforcement institutions and in building and improving the national capacities of host states. We believe that police can only achieve effective and long-term results if they strictly abide by the provisions of the UN Charter and closely cooperate with the host country, being guided there by the priorities of the country has determined and by the principles of national ownership and respect for national sovereignty. It's important to avoid imposing external pressure or one's own views of the core of reform processes. Often it is the police who serve as a link, not only between the population and the peacekeeping presence, but also between the population and governments. Transformations achieved at an early stage, even minimal successes, can build citizens' trust in the authorities, create favourable conditions for a return to normal life, and establish the preconditions for lasting peace and national reconciliation. Experience shows that it is vitally important also to take into account the specific country situation when providing assistance to states. Ignoring this and seeking to apply universal approaches to reforming such an important and sensitive part of society as law enforcement bodies will inevitably lead to the rejection of the formulas being proposed. Madam President, recently we have seen a significant intensification of the potential for conflict in different parts of the world, where, unfortunately, civilians are those worst affected. However, we do not share the interpretation of peacekeeping that is being disseminated today, one seen exclusively through the lens of protection of civilians and the provision of humanitarian assistance. We believe that the main responsibility for implementing these tasks belongs to the states themselves. Nor should we forget about traditional but still in demand tasks, such as observing compliance with peace agreements and separating opposing sides. Madam President, we support the need for an ongoing dialogue between the UN Security Council and troop-contributing countries on all aspects of peacekeeping operations activities, including at the stage of their planning and in developing mandates. But we must give a special role to the UN General Assembly Special Committee on Peacekeeping Operations, which is the main interstate forum for establishing guidelines instructing the UN Secretariat in the sphere of peacekeeping. In this context, we welcome the holding of a forthcoming briefing by the heads of police components to the Special Committee on PKOs. And in conclusion, for policing tasks to be carried out effectively, especially given the additional complicating factors of conflict, there must be predictable financing and due equipment support and staffing. In this context, the Russian Federation, as a police-contributing country, will continue to send officials to missions with the relevant equipment and skills, and is also ready to train police peacekeepers in keeping with UN standards at our specialised higher educational institutions. Thank you.
I thank the representative of the Russian Federation for his statement and also the Russian Federation's support for the Council resolution we've adopted today. I now give the floor to the representative of Chile.
Muchas gracias, señora.
Thank you very much, President. We thank the Australian Presidency for having convened this briefing, and thank you for the concept paper, which allows us to address the role of the police in peacekeeping and peacebuilding in post-conflict situations. We also appreciate the briefings from the police commissioners in Liberia, South Sudan, and the CAR. Madam President, Chile believes that peacekeeping operations are in their broad sense and that they include peacekeeping and peacebuilding with military, police, and civilian components working in a comprehensive framework. This session allows us to assess one of those components, the police component. It allows us to discuss the ways in which the states can support the overcoming and solution to conflicts. The increase in the police components deployed and the changing nature of their tasks reflects ever more complex realities and a change in the fundamental understanding of their work. Now, among other things, they have support for reform process, restructuring, and reconstitution of national police bodies and other bodies that are charged with maintaining robust rule of law in our countries. Whatever their functions are, they should be guided by a respect for human rights and a protection of civilians, including, of course, the concept of national ownership. Madam President, the police function comes with a daily interaction with the civilian population, hence the importance of the police component having the training and equipment needed to respect rule of law or to enforce rule of law, respect for human rights and a protection of civilians, and in particular the women and children, vis-a-vis gender-based and sexual crimes. It is important to protect the civilian population. But if this does not happen, the principle of the responsibility to protect brings us necessarily before the need to act. This protection of civilians also allows the police component to act as an early warning mechanism in step with the initiative of the Secretary General in the framework of Rights First. We must increase the presence and leadership profile of women in the police components. This is directly linked to the effectiveness of their work. And we call upon DPKO to incorporate in its reports recommendations in step with resolutions 1325 and 2122. We also encourage PCCs to provide their police sufficient training so as to close the competency gaps. The police components contribute to the laying of the groundwork for a robust rule of law in which promotion and of development through economic growth and eradication of poverty and social development are key elements when it comes to moving past conflicts and building peace. In this context, I should like to mention that since 1996, my country has undertaken assistance programs with our the National Police of Haiti, through which annually nearly 70 officers are trained in the police curriculum of Chile. Madam President, a trained and duly equipped UNPOL has the ability to facilitate reconciliation processes and the building of trust amongst the civil society, civilian population, and armed groups, favoring peace building, the rule of law, and the overcoming of crises through an inclusive process. We urge the permanence of such exchanges as it allows for us to make more informed decisions as we hear firsthand of the challenges, visions, and apprehensions of the police forces working on the ground. We would like to also underscore and appreciate the efforts made by countries providing police forces in the different PKOs, and in particular, those countries for which this contribution, unlike other contributions, also means an additional effort when it comes to no undermining their own police support in their own country. Lastly, President, I should like to express that we would have liked for this resolution adopted today to have directly recognized the role of the C-34 in the terms established in the resolution passed in the General Assembly. Thank you.
I thank the representative of Chile for his statement and for Chile's support of the resolution we've adopted, and I acknowledge Chile's important policing contribution, particularly in Haiti. I now give the floor to the representative of Chad.
Merci.
Thank you, Madam President. I would like to congratulate the Australian Presidency for taking the initiative to hold this meeting on the role of police in peacekeeping and peacebuilding. And I welcome the adoption of Resolution 2004-828, which we co-sponsored. I thank Mr. Avelatsous, Under-Secretary General for Peacekeeping Operations, and the heads of the police components of UNMIL, UNMIS, and MINUSCA for their briefings. We welcome the Australian innovation of inviting heads of police components to brief the Security Council. Chad notes the increasing role of UN police in peacekeeping operations and the increasing number of individual police and formed police units. Indeed, police staffing has gone from 1,600 in 1994 to over 2,300 personnel as of the 30th of December in 13 peacekeeping operations throughout the world, with four special political missions, which constitutes 14% of UN personnel in uniform today. We believe that strengthening the police component of UN peacekeeping and special political missions is making a great contribution towards stabilization in post-conflict situations, as well as peace building, reform of the security sector, as well as protection of civilians and rule of law. Madam President, issues related to training, skills, and equipment of police as well as their geographical distribution, are all crucial ones. Indeed, it's important for the police contributing country to ensure that the officials deployed have, among their skills, a high level of expertise, appropriate training, and equipment that is adapted to the situation. Otherwise, they will not be able to effectively discharge their mandates. Consequently, it is logical that the UN Police Division and member states have close cooperation among themselves in order to identify areas where there are shortcomings to be addressed or where improvements could be made. In this regard, we would invite member states that have those resources available to provide them to those who need them. Furthermore, given that UN police are called upon to interact with the population, it's important that they have general skills, including linguistic and cultural knowledge of the host country. Of course, knowledge of the language and culture of the host state isn't a prerequisite. However, it is one of the important elements to be taken into account in the selection process. Another important element, a crucial element, is geographical distribution and linguistic distribution, particularly in those areas of policing responsibilities within the UN. Therefore, we encourage the Secretary General and Member States to increase the number of women police in PKOs, including those in positions of responsibility, with at least 20% being reached in accordance with the 2009 campaign. We also would encourage closer cooperation between the UN Police Division and the African Union, which recently established a regional police organization called AFRIPOL. Furthermore, we welcome the efforts of the African Union in terms of policing missions on the continent, including the Somali mission. In conclusion, we would like to pay tribute to all police men and women in the service of the United Nations and to all PCCs who have made deployments in post-conflict or conflict situations. Their support to the host country police in the area of civilian protection, security sector reform, rebuilding and providing operational assistance and other functions for maintaining public order is considerable. For its part, Chad remains available to make its modest contribution to peacekeeping and international security, as was demonstrated by its recent commitments and its current ones through the deployment of police in different peacekeeping operations of the United Nations. With your permission, Madam President, I would like to ask one question to all three heads of police components of the three operations. What do you think, commissioners, about general knowledge, such as linguistic and cultural knowledge of the host country in the selection process? Should we make this a selection criterion? Thank you.
I thank the representative of Chad for his statement and particularly for Chad's support for the council resolution that we've adopted. I now give the floor to the representative of the Republic of Korea.
Thank you, Madam President. I would like to thank Police Commissioners Greg Hines, Fred Iga, and Luis Miguel Carrillo for their briefings. We also thank the presidency for organizing today's first ever briefing from the heads of the police components. Establishing the rule of law is a fundamental pillar in consolidating post-conflict peace. Initial peacekeeping operations would be fruitless unless strategically supported by efforts to institutionalize law enforcement functions through reforms in the security and justice sectors. Police components in peacekeeping and special political missions are increasingly called upon to play a more constructive role in this process. Even though they occupy merely 15% of the total UN uniformed personnel, their role is unique and irreplaceable. Their professionalism and expertise can assist in closing the loopholes in civilian protection activity and enable tailored advice in the institution building process. The police tend to face less psychological resistance than the military in host countries. Female police officers are also better positioned to deal with gender and child-related crimes, which often prevail with impunity in conflict-ridden areas. This comparative advantage should be fully utilized and appropriately systemized in the composition of the police components. Different perspectives on the rule of law deserve due attention in assisting a host country's capacity building. We believe, however, that post-conflict societies require, without exception, an end to impunity, transitional justice, and national reconciliation. The police leadership, the political leadership, should play a pivotal role in this regard in a transparent, impartial, and inclusive manner. Otherwise, the mission's assistance and engagement will have limited effect. Having said that, I would like to ask the briefers some questions. The UN missions are often exposed to unexpected circumstances. Based on the UN police policy and strategic guidance framework for international police peacekeeping, scenario-based training needs to be continuously elaborated. In Liberia, the outbreak of Ebola seriously threatens the peace-building achievements made thus far. The security situation may deteriorate unless addressed appropriately and in a timely fashion. I would like to ask Commissioner Hines, what specific efforts are being made to coordinate with the host government and other key partners, and what are the main obstacles undermining the work of security institutions? With regard to the protection of civilians, intercommunal fighting widely displaces civilians, as we have witnessed in South Sudan and Central African Republic. Displaced civilians can no longer find a safe haven. Even around the POC camps of the UNMISS compound, women and girls fall victim to sexual violence. Last May, the Security Council refocused UNMISS mandates to stress protection of civilians with enhanced police personnel through Resolution 2155. I would like to hear from Commissioner Iga what specific actions have been taken on the ground to protect civilians since last May. I also wonder whether there are any negative repercussions from suspending support for South Sudan's capacity building. In Central African Republic, the security situation is much worse with far weaker government function. MINUSCA is forced to assume more responsibility for policing, as the National Police Service is virtually non-existent. Impunity persists amid an endless cycle of retaliation between communities. The Special Representative of Secretary General Gaye once stressed the importance of establishing a criminal justice system in cooperation with international partners. In this regard, I would like to hear from Commissioner Carrillo whether the MINUSCA police component has helped this idea materialize with the transitional government. Before closing, we would like to pay special tribute to all UN police component personnel. We believe that the resolution adopted today will be a good reference for the high-level independent panel on peace operations for their comprehensive review due next year. Thank you, Madam President.
I thank the representative of the Republic of Korea for her statement, and particularly thank Korea for supporting our resolution today. I now give the floor to the representative of Argentina.
Señor President.
Madam President, we thank Australia for having organized this first specific briefing in the Security Council on a matter to which Argentina affords particular importance, as it is the number one regional contributor of political observers to PKOs. Further, we thank the police commissioners from UNMIL, UNMISS, 2Ss, and MINUSCA for their briefings to the Council, and we congratulate them and thank them for their work in difficult, complex scenarios, and we encourage the reoccurrence of this type of meeting in the future. Madam President, the role of UNPOL has taken on growing importance and relevancy in recent years, together with the evolution of multidimensional PKOs and the ever greater use of SPMs. In both cases, the police personnel undertakes currently essential functions aimed at rebuilding security institutions in the host states, working also in the promotion and protection of human rights, the consolidation of democracy, and rule of law. My country has supported these changes and evolution, and this evolution with the creation in 1992 of the first regional training center for police in PKOs in Senca Opas. And since 1991, with the uninterrupted participation of our security forces in PKOs. Currently, Argentina is part of the Group of Friends of UNPOL and the Group of Friends of SSR, having organized one of the four regional workshops in developing the strategic doctrinal framework for UNPOL. This has been an inclusive process that has included due consultation with the member states. Madam President, Argentina has participated constructively in the negotiations on the first resolution of the Security Council on the topic that we have adopted today. Regarding this important resolution, I should like to briefly underscore some specific areas. First, as we understand it, this resolution does give an adequate description of the important changes and growing relevancy of the role played by the police components in the PKOs, underscoring the need for close coordination with the states concerned and the other mission components in their tasks, various and sundry, and in particular those related to the promotion and protection of human rights, the strengthening of institutions and rule of law, SSR, judicial reform, and the fight against transnational crimes, among others. Likewise, the resolution underscores the important role played by UNPOL in POC, and in particular, those civilians that find themselves under the threat of physical violence, including all forms of sexual violence and gender violence in the theaters of operation of the peacekeeping operations. Although we don't want to fail to mention that the protection of civilians is the primary responsibility of the host country. On this point, while the drafting of the resolution covers the essential areas, we would have preferred for an operative paragraph to have made a greater emphasis on the role that the police components can play in the protection of civilians from human rights violations, particularly women and children. We welcome the fact that the resolution that we've adopted reaffirms the role of UNPOL in facilitating the participation and inclusion of women in conflict resolution and peace building, as well as the need to increase the number of women police officers deployed in PKOs, as well as, further, the coordination of police components with the advisors for the protection of women and children. Argentina also wishes to underscore the content of Resolution 1325 on women, peace, and security, and all of the subsequent resolutions. We would like to reiterate the need for a complete, equal, and effective participation of women in all phases of the peace process, given women's vital role in the prevention and settlement of conflicts and in peace building. We agree with the text of the resolution regarding the need for deployed personnel to have the ability and skills necessary for the discharge of their duties, and in particular, in the framework of PKOs with multidimensional complex mandates. The PKOs depend increasingly on the possibility of deploying high-level specialized personnel, and in particular, as relates to political and civilian tasks of a different nature, such as experts in rule of law and SSR. We also note the important potential for technical cooperation and bolstering of South-South cooperation. Madam President, we agree with the other members of the Council regarding the particular importance of this first resolution on the police components of the PKOs and also of the SPMs, a resolution that we have supported and voted in favor of today. However, there is one aspect in particular that influenced Argentina's support of the resolution. It has to do with a lack of an express mention in the text to the C-34, specifically in paragraph 20 of the report of the C-34. This is language that is standardized as it has been repeated over the years without being called into question by the members. In step with this mandate, which is habitually and broadly recognized, it is understood that C-34 is the only UN forum that has been entrusted with the broad review of peacekeeping operations in all their aspects, including those measures that are aimed at improving the capacity of the organization to undertake such operations. This means that the Secretary General, in the development and implementation of standards, guides, and procedures aimed at the improvement of PKO activities, including those incumbent upon the police components, must bear in mind this mandate fully. For this reason, Argentina, which is part of the C-34 Bureau, does not understand or share the resistance of some council members to an explicit reference to the mandate of the committee in a resolution that is so general and comprehensive as that which we have adopted today. Madam President, beyond this previous comment, I would like to welcome this resolution on which we have worked intensely in the Council over recent days, harboring the hope that this consensus text will allow us to continue to make progress in this important matter. And I thank you.
I thank the representative of Argentina for his statement, and I acknowledge Argentina's policing contribution to Minister. I now give the floor to the representative of Nigeria.
Thank you very much, Madam President. We also thank the Undersecretary General Latsous and the distinguished police commissioners and heads of police components from UNMIL, UNMIS, and MINUSCA for their comprehensive and indeed highly informative briefings. Your Excellency, your own statement this morning has inspired us greatly. We note that more than any other institution, the police is the most important link between the population and the state. Rightly, the French have a saying that the fear of the gendarme is the beginning of wisdom. And we believe that should permeate even in the area of peacekeeping, peace building, and conflict resolution. There is nothing more sobering and indeed more reassuring to the population than the presence of a police officer, the symbol of the state, a representative of law and order, and the executor of justice. With this reflection in mind, we commend the distinguished delegation of Australia for organizing this first ever briefing by heads of police components of the United Nations peacekeeping missions, which provides the Council with an opportunity to hear directly from and interact with those responsible for implementing Council mandates as they concern policing in peacekeeping. We also welcome the adoption today of the first ever Security Council resolution on policing, which Nigeria was pleased to co-sponsor. We commend your distinguished delegation, Your Excellency, for its leadership role in drafting this resolution. The resolution, in our view, that we adopted this morning should complement the other resolution or similar resolution that was adopted in Council in April during Nigeria's presidency on the issue of security sector reform. Through this resolution, the Council has demonstrated its commitment to, and among other things, to back, among other things, policing mandates with appropriate resources. This is significant because police components are taking on increasingly complex, multidimensional tasks in the context of peacekeeping missions. And to be effective, they need to be adequately supported. The resolution also shows that the Council recognizes the need for close consultation between the Secretary General and the Special Committee on Peacekeeping Operations, as well as member states, in order to promote the system-wide coherence in the policing-related work of the United Nations. In this regard, the prerogative of the General Assembly should also be respected. Madam President, going down memory lane, we would like to note that policing in the context of peacekeeping missions and special political missions is a matter of great interest to Nigeria. Our involvement in policing in the United Nations peacekeeping dates back to 1960, when a Nigerian contingent of 400 police officers was deployed to Congo alongside the UN mission ONUC. Since then, Nigeria has participated in over 20 UN missions across the world, involving the deployment of over 12,000 Nigerian police officers. Madam President, as indicated in the concept note for this briefing, peacekeeping operations have become multidimensional and now include the protection of civilians, security sector reform, support for electoral processes, post-conflict stabilization, peace building, and rule of law. The role of the components of peacekeeping missions has been transformed subsequently. Given this new reality, Nigeria believes that the time is appropriate to address policing in UN peacekeeping operations and special political missions. We share the opinion expressed by the distinguished delegation of the United Kingdom that this is very timely and indeed long overdue, and that there should be a continuation of today's process in terms of inviting heads of police components to brief the Council on an annual basis and to participate in deliberations as and when necessary. Given this reality, Nigeria believes that the time is appropriate, as I said, for incorporation of peacekeeping operations in special political missions as well. Being an integral part of UN peacekeeping operations, the police component must function interdependently with all other components, including the military and civilian components during mandate implementation. Our briefers have touched on critical aspects of policing in peacekeeping and SPMs. It is crucial to note that each peacekeeping operation and special political mission has unique challenges, requiring unique responses. For effective policing in UN peacekeeping operations and SPMs, the following measures might be taken into account. First, policing mandates must be clearly formulated. We support the position of the Working Group on Peacekeeping Operations that this can be effectively achieved through sustained, we quote, triangular cooperation between the Council, Secretariat, and police contributing countries. In this regard, the trio, in consultation with host states, must come up with workable standards, including relevant training and effective coordination to facilitate the implementation of policing mandates. Second, police contributing countries must be encouraged to provide personnel with the relevant competence to carry out mandated tasks. Third, the police must have the requisite pre-deployment training to enhance understanding of the environment in their areas of primary assignment. This will facilitate their integration and allow them to function effectively. Four, adequate resources, including equipment and funds, must be made available for the police to implement their mandates without any hindrance. Five, host state must guarantee the safety of UN police whenever deployed, and cooperate fully with them in the discharge of their mandate. And six, in order to enhance the role of women in UN policing, emphasis should be placed on assigning roles based on comparative advantages. We consider it appropriate for women police to be given a central role in the protection of women and children. This, we believe, will help to promote the women, peace, and security agenda of the United Nations. Madam President, as policing mandates continue to evolve in response to the changing pattern of conflicts, it is crucial that the Council is kept abreast of developments relating to UN policing in order to adopt relevant mandates. This will be aided by regular briefings of heads of police components, as reflected in the resolution that we have just adopted. We look forward to the Secretary General's strategic review on UN peacekeeping, which we expect will be carried out in consultation with member states through the Special Committee on Peacekeeping Operations. We also call upon the Peacebuilding Office and the Peacebuilding Commission to invite all heads of police components to participate in the review of the PBC's work to be held in June next year. I thank you, Madam.
I thank the representative of Nigeria for his statement, and I recognise the valuable contribution that Nigeria makes as one of the top 10 contributors of police to United Nations missions. I now give the floor to the representative of China.
Madam President, China appreciates Australia's initiative for this open briefing on UN peacekeeping policing at the Council. We welcome Foreign Minister Bishop to our meeting to preside over our deliberation today. I thank USD Lasus and Police Commissioners of MMIL, MMIS, SSS, and MINUSCA for their briefings. China salutes the entire UN peacekeeping police who are working in very difficult conditions for their dedication. Maintenance of international peace and security is one of the purposes of the UN Charter, as well as a pillar of the UN's work. In recent years, as the nature of conflicts and disputes have become more diverse, PKOs face increasingly complex situations and tasks. The UN peacekeeping policing mandates have also grown continuously. To ensure healthy and effective conduct of UN peacekeeping policing, it is necessary to move with the times and strike a balance between mandate formulation, implementation result, and a balance between efficiency and scale. In this connection, China has 4 points to make. First, UN peacekeeping policing should strictly abide by the Council mandate and the three principles of peacekeeping. Respect the sovereignty of the host state and heed the opinions of host states while helping them carry out activities such as SSR. Constructively provide training and advisory assistance and support and work to find assistance programs that are best suited to the local conditions. Second, to strengthen the focus of UN policing. When the Council deploys peacekeeping operations, it should ensure the peacekeeping mandate is visible and practical, and should also explicitly prioritize tasks and avoid all-inclusive mandates. The implementation result of peacekeeping policing mandates should be reviewed in a timely way. The mandated tasks and deployment scales should also be adjusted according to the developments in the host states in a timely way. Third, to comprehensively increase the efficiency of peacekeeping policing. The rapid deployment and operational capabilities of peacekeeping police has a bearing on whether the missions can play their role at key moments. The Council, the Secretariat, the host states, and TCCs should strengthen communication and coordination and improve the formation and deployment processes of peacekeeping civilian police and FPUs, and optimize logistics. In this process, the Secretariat should fully listen to and value the opinions and recommendations of the PCCs. The missions should strengthen scientific planning and management, improve efficiency of resources utilization, and avoid unnecessary waste and overlapping. Fourth, to strengthen capacity building of peacekeeping police. China supports the Secretariat to engage in close consultation with PCCs and C-34, develop standards for the organization, training and monitoring of peacekeeping police, and strengthen safety and security of peacekeeping police in view of the security situation in the areas of operation. The UN should step up their support for capacity building of peacekeeping police of regional organizations such as the AU and help them play a bigger role in maintaining regional peace and stability. Madam President, China sent peacekeeping police to the UN for the first time in 2000, and we are now an important PCC at the UN, as well as the largest PCC among the permanent members of the Council. China so far has sent cumulatively over 2,000 peacekeeping police to 8 missions. Right now, over 170 peacekeeping police are working to implement mandates at ANMIO and ANMIS-SS. Chinese peacekeeping police fulfill their duties well and have won extensive acclaims. China is willing to send more peacekeeping civilian police, FPUs, and specialized policing experts, such as forensic experts and criminal investigation officers, to the UN Blue Helmet, and is committed to helping PCCs improve their capacity building, including the African PCCs. China stands ready to work with the international community to make a positive contribution to the promotion of sustainable development of UN peacekeeping police, as well as the maintenance of international peace and security. I thank you, Madam President.
I thank the representative of China for his statement and China's support for our resolution, and acknowledge the contribution that China makes to United Nations policing, including in the UNMIL police component led by Commissioner Hines. Excellencies, there have been a number of points raised and questions put to the briefers by council members, so I'll now give the floor to the briefers to respond. Specifically, I now give the floor again to Mr. Greg Hines.
Thank you, Madam President, and thank you, Your Excellencies, for your important questions. To the first response to Rwanda, in relation to progressing reform, rebuilding and restructuring of the Liberian National Police and the other security institutions. In the particular case of Liberia, it was actually recreating the security institutions post-conflict. There has been steady progress over this time. We have seen a police force that was decimated to a police force today of almost 5,000 officers, which provide a policing service to the populace of Liberia, right across the entire of Liberia. It is a maturing organisation. It still has a way to go. The reason why we are still there. Importantly, they work in partnership with a number of other security agencies, the Bureau of Immigration and Naturalisation, the Drug Enforcement Agency, and the Transnational Crime Unit. These civilian agencies all have responsibility for domestic security in Liberia, and are all doing the best with the limited resources they have available to them to provide a professional response. Under the Ebola crisis that we've seen in the last 8 months within Liberia has seen sustained pressure put on these organisations, and there has been cracks on what we saw as maturing institutions in improving performance and operationalisation. What we can look to do here is look to provide and build on what we have seen as a result of Ebola, decentralised structures, issues that have been happening and been delivered from a national plan at a county level. We have seen decentralised structures, decentralised decision-making and decentralised resource mobilisation occurring right across Liberia, which has been a challenge to move what has been an over-centralised and bureaucratic process in the capital of Monrovia. This has perhaps been seen as one of the silver linings, and in our ongoing time in Liberia, we'll be looking to strengthen these local mechanisms. We have seen improved relationships with the community. We have seen improved responsiveness by the security agencies undertaking a range of tasks that are typically not policing functions, but under the health and humanitarian and other crises that Ebola has created in Liberia and across West Africa. We have seen the police perform admirably, and even though many of those have been affected by the crisis themselves, with a number of these agencies losing life to the crisis itself as well. They are still committed to their role, they are still committed to their function, they are still committed to improving and professionalising their organisations, and we will continue to work with them.
I thank Mr. Hines for his response. I now give the floor again to Mr. Fred Yeager.
Thank you very much, Madam President. And thank you so much for the overwhelming support that has come out of this important meeting. You've put us at the next level as ANPOL officers in peacekeeping. And the ball is in our court now to make it work. I think I have about three categories of answers that I would want to attribute to the questions that have come from members. First of all, let me make a general statement. From what I've listened to, Madam President, you don't want us to be lesser than what you expect us to be in the field. This has come out very strongly. We must be the ANPOL that we should be in the field, and therefore we need every support that can possibly come in our direction to do our work. Sometimes through experience, I realize that we have to be good diplomats in our roles as ANPOL. We have to be very strong professionals in terms of operations, and sometimes mix it with a bit of politics to understand host state situations. The second point I would wish to make is that there has been a lot of contribution on training and readiness for ANPOL to carry out their functions. And perhaps it is time to influence our member states to include peacekeeping training in police training institutions all over the world. If this becomes a serious matter in training, whether you are going to be deployed in peacekeeping or not, but come out of police training with the knowledge that there is a world that requires your skills, just in case you are picked on, I think that will make a very big difference. And I know the police commissioners would be willing to come as guest speakers to those police institutions. Finally, Madam President, is the issue of equipment. This is very serious. We need to be equipped. I will single out one example. There is a lot of crime happening now. And as police officers, we just can't afford to look on as crime increases every day and we don't have strong databases to share with the world when the world comes to stabilize. So we need equipment. We need support in terms of scientific management, research into crime, and be able to categorize what kind of crime is happening in our situations in order to enable the Security Council to make relevant policies to address support to the Security Council. Let me pick on one particular question from Rwanda. Has your training of police officers helped in any way? A lot of training was put into police training in South Sudan, but it was all lost when the crisis happened. But we managed to create a sense of shame among police officers. As we speak now, the Inspector General of Police is part of the biggest regional police organizations. And when he goes over there, he goes as South Sudan National Police Service. And when he mixes with colleagues, he's expected to tell them what he is doing in his own country as head of the police. So we've been able to put him at a standard that links into the common fraternity of policing all over the world. I think I'll leave it here. Thank you very much, Madam President.
I thank Mr. Yeager for his response, and I now give the floor to Mr. Luis Carrillo.
Thank you very much, Madam the President. Concerning the women in peacekeeping, and particularly in the police, of course there are much more that can be done. A lot was already done, either at the instrumental level by the Security Council with the several resolutions. But in terms of the more outreach, clearly, to encourage also the police contributing countries to participate with more female in peacekeeping, because it really makes the difference when we are speaking about working with the most vulnerable groups, victims, women, children, the elderly, IDPs, handicapés. It makes really the difference, the participation of female in peacekeeping. And maybe to enhance also their conditions in terms of the participation, in terms of welfare in the peacekeeping, maybe also to have a different term of duty, a different participation, shorter, and of course, as the colleagues said, training it is essential, but if the member states have more female in the national institutions, it will be more easy also to have more female in peacekeeping, so it's a global effort. And finally, in terms of providing particular training in the language skills and in the driving skills for peacekeeping, because sometimes it's one of the difficulties. And we welcome, of course, the resolution that will, for sure, it's an excellent initiative that will lead to more women in peacekeeping. In terms of the question from the permanent representative of Rwanda, the police-military cooperation, where, of course, in MINUSCA and in Bangui, we have a battalion in Bangui from Rwanda that is participating in Bangui Task Force. We have several instruments, either the normal ones with the meetings, but operationally speaking, the operational center is the same, where police and military. In the case of the Central African Republic, not only the UN forces, police and military, and within the Bangui, it's a single command, a unique experience that is going very well, and we hope that will give even more results than we had already. As I told, more than 107 persons were already arrested. We have also the international security forces, Sangaris and also EUFOR, and the national security forces. So all of this entails a level of coordination that we are doing it through this operational center in order to have a coordinated action. La question du représentant.
The question from the PR from Luxembourg on coordination in the protection of children. For us, for the police, this is very important. In the missions, we have advisors or counselors for the protection of children, but also in UNPOL, we have a focal point also. And when we work together in judicial cooperation and criminal investigations, we also have an expert. In Bangui, we will also have one soon in the different regions, because the future of the region, of course, depends on the children. And if we're not able to address that topic that you brought up, it's a problem. But we have to be very clear, as has been said to me by many members of the Security Council, the primary responsibility does rest in the hands of the national authorities. As my colleague from UNMIL has done well to say, it is our responsibility to help with capacity building among the local police forces. We have to help them to be efficient and effective in this domain.
Concerning the question in terms of the protection of civilians that was asked by the permanent representative of the United States, how we are implementing, of course, leadership, it's essential, and that the DPKO level, or OLSI, police division, there is clear guidelines, even new SOPs are being developed to make it more acute and more precise, the strategy, and then at the ground level where we are, we need to be able to deliver. The example that I gave in terms of a flashpoint matrix, where all the areas are properly listed, with frequent meetings on at different levels, strategic and operational level, to see how we can tackle it. One of the particular areas in Bangui is one neighborhood where we are doing exactly protection of civilians with the police and military capacity, preventing always that the people can, as much as possible, have a normal life. And, of course, the protection of civilians is essential for us in Bangui.
Regarding how UNPOL helps national authorities, and I'm responding to the question from the permanent representative of Lithuania, how is it that the police helps the judicial authorities? Well, of course, the resolution adopted by the Security Council on UTEMs is a good instrument. We've used it four times, but we also need cooperation with the local judicial authorities. We have arrests, we work with the national police, and also we work with the prosecutors and judges. And at the end of the trial or the process, we also protect all of those who need protection. We help the authorities in this effort. And in training as well, we help the national authorities in, through our training, sometimes helping them keep the separation of powers between the judiciary, the legislative, and the executive. And we also provide assistance as well in police training to court and training of judges as well. The question from the permanent representative of France, how are things unfolding with the Joint Bangui Task Force? We have the police and the military working together. We also have the reserve component of the military. We have the French forces as well. We have an excellent rapport with them operationally and with the EU, with EUFOR. We have an operations center. And there, the representatives of all these bodies are all together, liaison officers, and during a crisis with need, we increased participation from these groups. And in POC, the roles are identified, and we coordinate among ourselves in order to avoid redundancy and effort. All the neighborhoods, particularly those under most threat, we coordinate there with the deployed troops and police, and we have targeted operations as well, control points. Or when there are threats in a specific location, we coordinate in this group, in this command center. And, of course, I would be remiss to not thank France and Sangaris for the support and coordination. Turning to the representative of Jordan. She has asked about coordination between the police and the military, coordinating also with local authorities and the local police and military. This is necessary. Peacekeeping operations are transitional. It's necessary for the national institutions must also have the primary role with it when it comes to security. And we support that. Of course, we have mechanisms to do so. On a global sense, or in a general sense, there were questions from the UK.
...of the United Kingdom concerning manpower. I don't know a single police commissioner or a special representative that will always be happy with the means that he has, either the human resources, either the material resources. We will, of course, we want more. Of course, we will be delighted to work more, but we will not complain on the resources not to be able to achieve the mandate, particularly when it concerns to the protection of civilians and the level of expectative, particularly in the Central African Republic, it's very, very high. And of course, I can assure you and the members of the Council that we will do our best in order to successfully implement the mandate. And the measure of success, it's always, always the end state. And the end state is to have security forces at the national level, the police, that will be able to provide security to their own people. This is how we will measure. And there are the tools. My colleague from Liberia spoke about a few. A framework, the strategic framework that we have at the police division, it will help. And the end state, it will be this one. I have addressed all the questions concerning also the question of Korea in terms of the case management system. We have an integrated approach, and that's what MINUSCA brings. MINUSCA brings human rights, justice, community violence reduction, and civil affairs that will help, of course, the implementation of the mandate. And not only the police authorities, but also the political authorities and the government of transition to set up a country where everyone can help and where everyone can have a normal life. Finalement, seulement.
Lastly, to the representative of Chad, the United Nations police are cooperating with national and international police and with the representative of the African Union and, of course, with Africapol. They will always be welcome in terms of coordination.
Point, it is our intention at the MINUSCA to continue to support operationally the national institutions. And as it was stressed here by several members of the Security Council, we are in the way of establishing a development plan to strengthen the capacities of the national police and gendarmerie. Thank you very much. Merci beaucoup.
Mr. Carrillo, I think that there was one further issue from the representative of Chad about language capacity. And could you comment on that and the impact that that has?
Thank you very much, Madame la Présidente. Merci beaucoup.
Thank you. As regards language, of course, for UN police, since we're the most visible face of the state, what we want is for Central African police to be present everywhere, and we're there to support them. All of UNPOL speak French now in the mission. It's not only individuals in UNPOL, but also missions, units of police, as well as formed police units. And that's really the first mission I've been to where we've had this capacity. We even have men and women police who are capable of speaking local languages. When they were deployed to MISCA, to the African Union regional headquarters, it was very important to have contacts with that. We need to be more specific in terms of qualifications, especially when we talk about development. There are also capacities that sometimes, where language isn't quite as important. For example, I'm talking about in Haiti, where there's a database. Sometimes it's important to have that capacity, and language is redundant. But as I was saying, and thank you for the question, permanent representative of Chad and Madam President, each and every one in UNPOL speaks French at this moment in time at the mission. Thank you.
Again, I take this opportunity to thank members for supporting this resolution and the briefers, including Assistant Secretary General Titov, for their participation in this first ever dedicated debate and first ever resolution on policing issues. We now have a platform for further work and outcomes. As there are no more names inscribed on the list of speakers, the Security Council has thus concluded the present stage of its consideration of the item on its agenda. The meeting is adjourned.